Hey everyone, and welcome to Signals from the Frontline, your every Thursday recorded podcast brought to you by Frontline Gaming. We are your hosts, Kicker, the Chief of Serial and Sigilite of the FLG, Nikki D. Cannon, Flannel Flan and Producer Extraordinaire, and I am Seth the Mad Duck, your competitive correspondent. How has everyone been doing?
I am doing great, man. I gotta say, you know, I've been on my goal to make an entire army of Kroot, and I finished my first box of Kroot, of this Kroot hunting pack. It is fully painted. It is gorgeous. It is sexy. Can we show my hobby progress? Can we bring that in? There we go. Look at this. On the show, you know, we like to talk about our hobby progress. It keeps us in check, keeps us accountable. Yes, there we go, Seth. Look at that. Those are my Krootox Rampagers and a Krootox Gunner thing, whatever nice, they are. I don't know. They are finished. They're base. They're sexy. I love them so much. And now I just have to do it two more times.
I believe in you, Kicker.
I can do it. I'm going to have 60 of the little dudes and a whole mass of cavalry. Very excited. I will say, though, I played a game yesterday with one of my buddies, and man, Kroot just don't have a way to take down 2-up armor. They just doesn't. There's nothing I could do.
Specifically pre-show, what did you ask me?
Yeah, I'm like, Seth, is there any way I can win a game if my army is neither able to be offensive nor defensive, basically?
Yeah, he was like, what if I can't kill anything and I'm not durable? And I was like, I don't think you can win a game then, Kicker.
But they have fun little janky stuff, and there's a lot of them, but they die easily, and
they do.
Yeah, there's just, I don't know. So
They look good.
And I'm not
the yellow quills with like the blue bees and stuff in them. Yeah, they look good.
They got a little turquoise. I'm going with that whole Native American. Yeah. I think they look awesome, and I'm not disheartened. I'm still going to finish this whole army. I'm trying to figure out how I can not get totally destroyed. I mean, guys, I lost to Grey Knights. All right, like, I know they're not exactly.
I lost the Grey Knights this weekend.
Okay, cool.
Well, I lost to Grey Knights too.
Thank you, guys. Yeah,
Grey Knights are actually a decent army.
All right, good. It's not just me. But it has been fun. I will continue. I'm getting better with them. I'll tell you, I'm getting more points each game. So
all right. That's all you can do is get a little better each time.
Well, so I'm talking about my practice, Seth. Did you have something
this week? Yeah, I had a lot of practice. Now, I'm going to tell everyone here at the top of the show real quick before we get too far along. For an astute viewer at home of our videos, they might notice that the logo on my chest is now on the opposite side of what it was, because it was backwards. Because a long, long time ago in a galaxy far away, I had flipped the horizontal axis on my camera so that in real life, when I looked to my right to look at Kicker, it would feel like I'm looking in the right direction, but that was opposite. So I've had to flip my video back. So as Nikki D pointed out tonight, since my logo was backwards, so I'm mentally, physically reminding myself every step of the way to point that way to Kicker and Nikki D. Yeah. So I'm probably going to do that wrong at some point. You're going to see me staring in a corner during this video, and you're going to be like, is Seth having a stroke? Just trying to figure out my new world in this new set.
But Seth, I appreciate your attention to detail.
Nikki D's the one who caught that, and I was like, I can fix that. Now I'm like...
He pointed it out, but you care about fixing it, you know? So I appreciate you caring about fixing it. But yes,
I mean, like, as much as I care, like, just again, behind the curtains things, like, I got, like, behind the ear headphones so I could stop wearing my over the ear headphones to make it again look more natural, like we're supposed to be here together. Yeah.
We are. What are you saying? Of course we are. We're in the exact same spaceship.
In the aluminum egret.
In the aluminum egret flying through the galaxy right now at light speed.
Anyway, so yes, I did do a practice weekend. So as I'm sure folks know, the Orc Codex is officially out on preview. And here at Flying Gaming, we did have access to the Codex for review purposes. So I packed up a literal mountain of orcs. Kicker, you've seen carts with a lot of stuff stacked on top of them. Have you seen a cart with that much stacked on top of
it? That's a lot of stuff, man.
I put a lot of, and believe it or not, like, I ended up, so I went over to Atlanta for Saturday and Sunday to hang out with some of my friends in Atlanta from the Pro Tabletop group that run the NTL. Because I am playing with some of them in a team event in May, and just to get some practice with orcs. So I packed up a pile of orcs, you know, excuse the photos, because there's going to be some unpainted models, because I had a lot of stuff to take over and try. And so I took over, and I played like 4 or 5 games over the weekend. I think at this point, between TTS and in-person reps, I'm close to like 10 games with orcs.
Trying
things out, trying to see what works, what doesn't work. Having a lot of fun with them. I really appreciate those.
Hot take right now.
Yeah.
You've got 10 reps in. Mm-hmm. What is the detachment? What is the one to go with?
I'm leaning towards Dread Mob because, okay, don't get me wrong, Bully
you
Boys
like to push the button.
Well, I do like to push the button, but Bully Boys is good. Bully Boys is combat, and it's more combat. It's that's only the button is you hit the button twice. It's I punch and then I punch again. And when you have an army that only plays in one phase like that, it can be a little limiting in a lot of matchups. So I like the Dread Mob because that gives you access to some decent shooting profiles, and you can still have like Mega Knobs are good regardless of what detachment you put them in. So you can have Mega Knobs in a Dread Mob detachment and they're still good. You can have Mega Knobs in a Bully Boys and they're even better, but they still punch and are just as durable in Dread Mob for just a little bit less time. But so that's kind of what I'm leaning towards right now. You know, we still, it's what we're recording this on the 17th. So I think it's like 10 days before the Orc Codex is actually like out on the streets, and we expect GW to do a points update for the codex then. So it's a little early to say what the points are. Certainly the things I'm playing might be drastically different come points time. But we're kind of playing with our best guess. But yeah, been having a lot of fun with them, really enjoying them, getting back into the groove of playing a combat army. Cause I've been playing a lot of really shooty heavy armies for the last few months. In that vein of kind of getting ready, I also can now, I guess, formally announce, you'll see on the table there, there's a Vanguard over there is a Vanguard Tactics objective. And I have played under the Vanguard Tactics banner for a while now, but I will officially be part of the Vanguard Tactics Champions Cup team. So I'm excited to represent the team there, and also, of course, represent the team from Signals here out at Champions Cup. So excited for that. As part of that, our captain, Nick Kiever, is making me record all my games in a log. So that's been a new experience in recording everything in a log.
Your diary. We're going to call it a diary.
I mean, it's like a spreadsheet where it's just like, who did you play? What did you, like, what army were you playing? What army were they playing? What missions did you play? What did you win or lose by? Yada, yada, yada. So it's important information for when we get down to starting to figure out pairings. But it just, like, he wants me playing two or three games a week between now and September, which I think is feasible.
Obviously, you're going for the throw. You're going to win this thing. I mean, you're like,
yeah.
Really, yeah. All right, cool.
Yeah,
cool.
That's the point.
Cool.
It's a Champions Cup. We're going to be the champions. That's what we're doing, Kicker. What do you think? Not doing the Champions Cup? Not trying to win?
You're just going to have fun. No, you're going to win. All right.
No, yeah. So we're taking it fairly seriously. So obviously, I'm probably going to be on Orcs, or unless there's a massive meta shift. But Orcs have kind of what's been slated for me to be focusing on. I'm sure I'll pick up some other armies to focus on kind of as the year progresses if we decide that maybe we need to have other options. But anyway, so that's what's been going on for me on the 40K front. I guess I'll save my Fallout for later. my wife and I had our anniversary yesterday at the time of recording. We've been together for 13 years and we've been married for 8. I don't know, like, I'm sure you guys have, but I wanted to get us something for, like, because we're going to go out to a nice dinner later this weekend and, you know, that kind of thing. But I wanted to get us a couple's gift. And I got us Pokemon Scarlet and Violet as our couple's gift, because we usually get the Pokemon games together and play them together.
I have no idea what that is. Is this a video game?
Yeah, it's a video game. Cool. When I was a kid, and the first Pokemon game came out, Blue, Red, and Blue.
Yeah, I had that.
Blue.
Yeah.
Yeah, I played that. And you know how you're supposed to trade Pokemon, you know, the games have different Pokemon in them. I never really had a lot of other friends that I would play video games with when I was a young kid. So I didn't really trade. So like early on, I don't say early on, but at some point early in our relationship, I started buying us like, you know, Black and White for DS and Sun and Moon and Sword and Shield, and we both got a copy of Arceus, and you know, so we've been doing that for a while where we both get a copy of the game and we play together. I'm currently further than her in the game, but specifically while we were recording, she's catching up. it's been fun kind of just, you know, having that nostalgia hit. Pokemon games have changed a lot since I was a kid. I think I played a solid hour and a half before it finally was like, all right, go have fun. which was like a super drag. I don't know how like if you gave that, like, fast forward, Oak's like 5 or 6 and you're like, here's your first Pokemon game. No kids sitting there for an hour and a half listening to them tell about going to school and all this crap.
They want immediate gratification. Yeah.
So like, I was like, what the crap? Because like the original Pokemon games are like, you want to be a champ? Have fun, kid. Get out of your house. Yeah. Go.
Go take Pikachu and go light up things with electricity.
Yeah. Like it was very slow paced. But now I've got to the part where it's like opened up and it's like, all right, go wherever you want. Do whatever you want. Go find all the Pokemon. Fight all the gyms. Have fun. So been cruising through that. I had some frustration. I was trying to be like, Pokemon's gotten way more complex since we were kids, Kicker. So every Pokemon has like a nature that like makes certain things better and worse about them. And so like, if you want a really good Pokemon, like for instance, I was trying to catch like a fighting Pokemon called Tinkatank.
Are you serious? I mean, we got a fucking name. Is that sorry?
Just follow me here. And it needed a specific nature. And it was like, it needs to have the like calm nature or something that. And so there's no way to tell when you catch him. You just catch him and then you go into the box and look and see if you got the right nature. I swear, I think I caught, there was like three Pokemon in the last like day that I was like, okay, I want this part of my team. I want to level them up. And I was like, Google, what's the right nature that I need to get? I think I caught 90 different versions of all those Pokemon.
Yeah.
To catch the right one.
But you got it. You eventually got
dedication. Yeah, I eventually got it. But it was like, I was sitting at my computer so I could have on my other screen, I could have a show that I was listening to. And then I was Googling what I needed to do to find the crap. And then I'm like having a hard time finding this one Pokemon. Like, oh, you need to go to this town and eat a chocolate churro so that you can catch the right. Things have gotten way too complex, Kicker. Without like
Seth, in our Discord, the Signals from the Frontline Discord, do we have a Pokemon channel yet? Because we should at this point.
I just wanted to express like how complicated it is because you know you and I've played that as a kid, and it was like I remember like if you didn't have like a guidebook, you were still like I don't really know what to do. I'm now like I don't a guide textbook to get through this game. So been doing that, and then. I want to give a huge shout out to a member of our Discord, Cosmic, because as part of this week's show, we were getting ready to talk about the static frontline gaming terrain. I don't have all the terrain physically. I play mostly on TTS, and I was trying to get the frontline gaming terrain setups into TTS, and I play TTS. I can build my army and move it around the table, but like building a table in TTS from scratch is a little beyond my pay grade. And Cosmic from our Discord stepped up and he actually made this, if Nikki D can show the next slide, which is the Frontline Gaming Terrain pack in a workshop file. So cool. You can go, there should be in the description of this video or this podcast, or just join our Discord and you can find a link to that. And it has,
is that the chaos set? That looks like the chaos set.
That's the sister set.
Oh, the sister. Sorry. The sister set.
But they're all 10 layouts are in there. Perfect. So you just, it's a one click. You download that workshop. And then when you add it in, there's a little pack of all 10 that you can load from. So
perfect.
I really appreciate him going through the effort of scaling the terrain correctly and then building the table. So it all works out. So that's been super useful for me to learn about the terrain system and kind of play with the terrain system. So super excited about that. So huge shout out to Cosmic. Check the links in the description of the video or the show, or of course, just join our Discord if you want to get access to this, because this has been a community-driven project. And I really want to give him a huge shout out because I couldn't have done that on my own.
Well, Nikki D, what have you been up to, man? Come on, you've got to been getting some hobby progress done, please. Hopefully.
Yeah, I did. No, last week. I did not have hobby progress, and I begged for forgiveness.
You did promise that you would do it.
Yeah.
And I did. So these are my plague greens that I'm painting up with the slap chop method. They're the one guy that's on the front left hand side. He has not all of his colors based in, aside from the plague marine green. So that'll be my next step, and then basing. I should be able to get that all done. There are so many details on these little guys. I was hoping to have them finished. I really was. And it just, there's too many details. There was not enough time to get that part done. But guys, I want to talk about some other chaos related things in Warhammer. And there were two items that people were really excited to text me about this week.
We're doing it.
One of them we'll talk about later in the show. But the other item was Emperor's Children. Did you guys hear about or see what's happening with Emperor's Children in 40K?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
But you are chaos lover, you got to share the news, man.
Yeah. So what's happening with Emperor's Children is that this announcement was put out on Tuesday. They are not going to be included, or the Emperor's Children Slaanesh Chaos Space Marine units are not going to be included in Chaos Space Marines when it comes out. They will instead have their own index. So that's really all of the information that we have at this point. But speculation there says that if they're not included about the codex, they're probably not that far off from them getting their own standalone codex like Death Guard do, like Thousand Suns, like World Eaters. So that part I think is really exciting. There's a lot of players that are excited, but Kicker and Seth, I will say at this point, I'm actually not going to be playing Emperor's Children.
Yeah, I'm not going to do it. Just not your thing?
Not my thing. If I'm going to do a Chaos Space Marine Army or another one in addition to the Death Guard, it's going to be a Word Bearers. They're actually one of my favorite legions, Chaos or Loyal in all of 40K. So if I start another Space Marine Legion, it's going to be Word Bearers specific coming out of the, you know, the natural Chaos Space Marine Codex. So that's my thoughts there. I'm excited for everybody who is, because there's so many people who are fans of that legion, and I know that they can't wait to see them.
So I just something kind of occurred to me from a design philosophy standpoint that I think is interesting. So from the Chaos, so Chaos Space Marines and regular Space Marines, follow me here, are both descendants from the pre-heresy Space Marines.
Yeah,
sure.
From a design philosophy standpoint, on the Imperial side, you have a base Space Marine Codex and supplements that add units and rules to it for Blood Angels, Dark Angels, Space Wolves, so on and so forth. On the Chaos side, with them spinning off this last kind of chapter of Marines, they're leaning more towards, I have a base Chaos Space Marine Codex, and then complete standalone codexes for World Eaters, now probably Emperor's Children, Death Guard, and T-Sons. So it's interesting from a design standpoint. Once upon a time, you could just, you know, complain that Chaos Space Marines were just Marines with spikes and they weren't any different. And that seems to lend them a kind of bigger opportunity to give the Chaos Space Marines more flavor than they do regular Space Marines.
Yeah. I mean, and they have so many more units that are distinct to that. I feel like it's more distinct, like Space Wolves, you know, Blood Angels.
Dark Angels have a lot of distinct units.
Yeah. So, well, we will see, guys. Yeah. We will see. Maybe we need to do a poll next week to see how many people are hyped for Emperor's Children versus, you know, all the other Chaos Legions, I guess, because I don't really know that many. I mean, you guys seem to. I don't know that many people that are like fanatical about that particular faction of Chaos.
But I already know several people are like, I'll just start a new army.
There's a crowd.
EJ Landing and Artie was like, just sign me up
and I'll do it.
I'll play that, I guess.
Well, so we do. You know, I'm going to jump things really fast from our notes, but we're talking about a poll here. What about the poll we did today? I wanted to know if people thought our painting standard or should be more subjective or objective in terms of determining the best painted from the top cut, you know, the finalist. Should it be purely objective? Should it be purely subjective? Or at least what should be mainly subjective versus mainly objective? 63% people say it should be primarily an objective-based rubric, while 37% say subjective. Nick, Seth, what do you guys think? Seth first. I mean, what is your heart and soul feel? Should we be more subjective or objective regarding painting?
It's very hard to write an objective rubric that is going to clearly define a winner in the paint world. I think certainly there is a paint rubric, an objective rubric that you could use to say, this is what it takes to make top cut, to make second round of judging. But I don't think you could realistically write a rubric that actually declares who's best painted. You have to have that subjective judge's eye to really start to pick up on not even just technical details, but artist choice. We've talked about it before with Jacob Thayer from the Hobby Goblins about how, you know, a truly top tier army, the display board, the army, everything about it creates a story and it creates a setting. And it's hard to quantify a setting in a rubric, you know? So
all of from our community says that objective with clear items to score, but we should use subjective as the tiebreaker alone, which is great, right? You should hit all the base points, and then once you hit that point, go to subjective. What about you, Nick? What do you think, man? What are your thoughts? I mean, you pride yourself in your painting.
I do. I'm not a top level painter as it goes for these items, but I would say generally agree with Seth's comments and those also that, you know, we're talking about it. Objective to me is the like minimum requirements to get in there. But once you're getting to that top cut though, it's going to come down to judges' perspective. Different judges have different considerations on what is more technical, right? Yeah. And what's going to be different. So that would just be my thoughts for everybody.
I think objective is a good way to be like to stratify the different levels of paint. Like here's your battle standard ready that everyone has to meet to be at the event. And then here's, if you're doing, you know, some events do overall scoring. And so, okay, here's the points you have to make overall, like the, the top amount of points for the overall scoring. And then beyond that, maybe this is a subjective zone of judging for final top painted, you know.
Guys, you can always jump into the Frontline Gaming community group on Facebook to help contribute to these polls, share your comments. Micah in the community said, you know, subjectivity should only come into play once objectivity has been exhausted, which it makes sense too, right? And then we got Lee Harris, as always opinionated. He goes, he simply comments that air should not be allowed. take that as you see fit.
I think we get into a very dangerous game of banning any form of, you know, this type of painting is okay, this type is not, because everyone has different strengths and weaknesses they like to highlight with their painting. So, you know, I for the longest time was a brush only kind of guy. I've been over in the airbrush for a while now and been enjoying it. But it's definitely not.
I think they both are. You have to have skill to use either one. It's just a different set of skills.
It is a different set of skills. Yes.
Cool. 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 Well, you know, we also have some life stories here. You know, we like to share life stories on our show, guys. Last week, I kind of alluded to what I was doing. It is official. My wife gave me the green light. It is public. It, you know, her job, her community knows, and now I'm allowed to share to you guys. I am officially moving. I am moving to Utah in next month. It is a big deal. I'm extremely excited. My first big GT this year will be the Salt Lake Open, because that will be 3 miles from my new home. So very, very excited.
Kicker, you asked pre-show when I was going to come out and visit. When's Salt Lake Open?
Yeah, Salt Lake Open, August. Our friend Mario runs that one. So come, Seth, come. Stay at our house. We'll go play some 40K. It'll be fun. I'll pick you up
from August here. Is also WTC, and that's a lot of travel.
It's okay. We can travel. It's fine. It's fine. Yeah. It'll be fine. Just do what Nick did. What was it? Nick, you did this 2 months ago.
Three events in 3 weeks. Yeah.
Yeah. Right, Nick.
Except mine will be on different continents.
Yeah. No, it's okay. That's fine.
Just minor difference.
Any major life stories for either one of you guys? What's going on?
I mean, I'll check in with my my workout plan. I told you last week I was using that AI app, Juggernaut. It's grading my readiness each workout based on previous workout performances, plus like you do a warm up session, and then you rate the different things you did in the warm up session, and that determines what your readiness is to do the main workout. So it's been an interesting experience. It's certainly challenged me in ways that I wasn't expecting. Like there are some muscles that I'm like, oh shit, that's really sore. Why is that so sore? I don't think I did anything. And it's like, no, I specifically targeted that to make you hurt. I've been sticking with it. It's definitely not like, I'm not as tired the next day. I'm not as sore the next day, as I am with my normal like powerlifting routines. So, I think that's the point, is it's trying not to exhaust me. It's managing your fatigue level. So it seems to be doing that well. So we'll keep at it and see how it goes. You never know. I definitely made a mistake. I'm working from a home gym, so I'm kind of jerry rigging some things together to do certain lifts. And I was doing some tricep pull downs in a seated position from like an overhead cable pole and smashed both my wrists into the plate.
I probably can't see anymore, but I had
bruises over both my wrists this weekend. And everyone was like, what'd you do? I was like, it was really dumb. I was just, don't worry about it. I'm fine. Okay. So, minor injury.
But. Nick, any life, life stories, life events happening for you in the past week, or just business as usual?
Yard work. Yeah. It's springtime and it's terrible for my allergies, but yard work. When I was not inside or painting and that sort of thing, I did go to a beer fest.
Better excuse to stay inside and paint then.
Yeah. I mean, I would like that too, but that's
beer fest though. Is that a thing that you have in the DC area? Beer fest?
Oh yeah. It was beer fest at the Nats Park, and we had a great time with that. So that was 3 or 4 hours on Saturday, and I had a great time with that. But again, that was time away from painting.
Shame on you,
Kicker. Let's get through our quick industry news segment, and then we'll get into some FLG news.
Fast, nothing too Dark Oath Army Box for Age of Sigmar. So it's basically the new Slaves to Dark starter set. new miniatures, all new miniatures, plenty of head swaps in there. And of course the codec, well, the supplement, all the battle tome, I believe they call it. So new miniatures. I know a lot of guys that have picked this or are wanting to pick this up because they are all new miniatures. There's a lot of, you know, excitement for the new Age of Sigmar edition, which is coming out this summer. So, you know, there's just a lot of excitement for it. And this is looks like a fun army.
They're quality miniatures.
Yeah, and if you're going to start a new game system, might as well start with the newest of those models. Yep. Old World, not necessarily new, but Old World is getting a bunch of miniatures released as well. We're going to get the Lady Elise Duchard. I don't know who she is, but she's riding a pretty horse. And then we've got more Bretonians, Tomb Kings, Orcs and Goblins. The Orcs and Goblin models that they showed hit home. Those were the exact miniatures I had as a kid. The Goblin Wolf Riders and the really, like, I don't know how to
call them. It's a good thing and a bad thing when they're reselling the same models you bought when you were a kid.
I know, but I just, like, I loved them as a kid, but now I'm comparing the weird, like, I don't know how to describe them. The Goblins kind of look just weird compared to modern sculpts. So, yeah, not a huge fan of them compared to the new ones, but there's a lot of nostalgia there. Frontline Gaming news, though, guys. BAO, as of 3 p.m. today, we added tickets.
I saw.
People have been getting a little aggressive with me, like demanding to get into BAO. They're like, I'm a local, I should be playing. And I'm like, guys, you got to buy your tickets when they go live. It's first come, first serve. I can't save tickets for locals. I'm sorry. But I've been begging with the venue to give me more space. I was able to get a breakout room, which allowed me to take the entire Old World tournament and put it into a separate room. So suddenly we could add more 40K tickets. We added, I think, 24 tickets. And I think as of right now, we have 2 tickets left.
Jeez.
And that is, yeah, right? Like, boom, people are buying, you know. So this event got way bigger. But like I said, guys, you got to buy tickets when they go live. Event you're thinking about getting, going, like, ACOs come, ACO tickets. Don't wait to the last minute. We're going to talk about BAO's static terrain a little bit, but the static terrain packet is live out there. So we'll hop into that in a second. Let's talk about ACO, though. ACO, the hotel is almost sold out. You don't want to not stay on site at ACO. That's the kind of event where you want to stay, hang out with your buddies. Seth, you've been there. There's nothing really close
by. I've been there two of the three of the years that it's ran.
Yeah. So you want to stay there.
It's a nice hotel. It's one of those, it's a very large casino, and it's one of those, it's nice. You don't necessarily want to leave because it's nice on the inside. There's lots of good food options. I think the first time I was there, I literally didn't go outside the entire time.
Yeah. That's the problem with those large resorts, right? You kind of just live in this weird biodome and you never leave.
But no, it's nice. And it's definitely convenient staying on site because there's not a ton of other hotels nearby. So then you're kind of Ubering to and from. Every day, which is kind of a pain in the neck.
Yeah, you don't want to do that.
It's just easier to stay on site, particularly, you know, so you can, like, not have to rush off after the day's done, and you can hang out with your friends and go get a drink or go get
food. I think Nikki D was just hitting me up requesting information about the room block, right, Nick?
Oh yeah, I've got friends, especially with the announcement of the static terrain, that are now planning where ACO is on the schedule, which to me was, let's go, boys. Happy to have you there. Last year was my first time at ACO. I had a great time there for it. Echo all of Seth's comments there for it. Get in the room block. It's a big casino, so it's definitely one where it's more, you know, difficult if you're not in the room block, or you just have further to walk and further to push your cart. And that's more, that is more people to tell, to talk to them about what you're doing there. And, you know, just, you
I
know,
mean, people some at the craps like table, to do that, Nikki D.
People at the craps table, they're rolling dice. You're just rolling dice in a different way.
You're absolutely right. You do want to try room block closer to the main convention center. Guys, the ACO, you briefly alluded to it, but yes, ACO as well as the rest of the events this year will be using the static terrain guidelines that we've created. All right, let's jump to Lone Star Open. People have been begging me for this one as well. I was trying to get them live for Friday. Lone Star Open should be live Tuesday. We're just adding a few more game systems.
He was busy trying to get ready to move.
Yeah, sorry. I'm just relocating my entire family cross country and trying to get things like school and insurance and the house all taken care of. But yes, LSO should be live on Tuesday of next week. And then let's talk about the Champions Cup. Next week, we're going to do our first club spotlight. It will be a surprise. Yay. Seth, Nick, get ready to interview some people.
I will be ready.
Nick, I need to know some nerd news. We've had stuff happening. Please share.
Yes, we have. All right, so first things first here, people. And I will say, last week after the show, I had so many people texting or calling me or messaging me on Discord saying, hey, 3 body problem. We should talk about that. So, Kicker, I know you started watching it.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts?
Okay, I'm going to be honest, guys. I was really hyping it up. We watched the first episode. My wife and I were like, yes, we're into this. Second episode, third episode, we're like, it's just getting a little too out there for us. I don't know. I'm going to give this a big fat poo-poo. I'm sorry. We got into it and we are backing out and immediately retreating to the warm embrace that is Fallout.
Yes! Yes!
All right, Nick, though, what is your thoughts on Three Body Problem? Assuming you've watched more than one episode, because the first episode got us, right? We liked the first episode.
Yep. I still have not watched any of it, but I will tell you, though, Friday morning, my wife comes up to me and she's like, hey, so you don't want to watch Three Body Problem then? Apparently she watches these episodes in the show, which that was actually news to me. She doesn't want to warm, but I appreciate that she supported me in these sort of things. She's like, so I can watch Three Body Problem without you then, right? And it was yes. So I have a review of Three Body Problem right. from my wife. Okay. This is what she dictated to me while she was baking a cake today. So she noted that the only like glaring similarity to Game of Thrones is that how the opening sequence of the show is done. That's basically it. She also loved having a show with physicists where it wasn't dependent upon having a laugh track going on. That's a shot at the Big Bang Theory specifically. She noted that there was an awesome scene, quote, with people in a massive ship getting nanoparticles sliced to death like they were in a giant slap chop. She really liked that. And then she really liked the story changes. It was very compelling and rich. She said they'd do that in my best Ron Burgundy impression, but I don't really have one. So she was a big fan of the show. She really liked it. She said it was really emotional. There were a couple times where even just being around in the house, I saw her, you know, crying watching the show. There are parts where she was laughing, parts where she was excited. So I may have to reevaluate it.
How many episodes did she in though? One episode?
She finished the entire show in 3 days.
Dang. Okay. Maybe, right. I don't know. At the end of episode two, we were like, oh, so maybe I need to get through that first time. I don't know. All right. Well, yeah. I'm glad she liked it. Wow.
But okay. Let's talk about getting through another series, Seth.
Yeah.
Yes. Fallout.
Did you finish it, Seth? Did you finish Fallout?
Yes, Kicker. So I specifically delayed my practice weekend.
Okay.
So that I could watch, because it was my wife and I were watching it. So I watched one episode Thursday night with my wife, and then because she was asleep after we finished recording last Wednesday. And then I was like, I need more. And so I specifically delayed my departure. She was like on call for work, came home Friday night, and we watched four episodes Friday night. Wow. Then when I got home Sunday, we watched the remaining three. I'm not going to be spoilery.
No, not allowed.
It was very good. If you're a fan of the Fallout games, it hits all the right notes. It has some big reveals about the Fallout universe. So it definitely connects to the wider universe. It's very good. It hits all the right notes. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I have like minimal to no criticisms of the show at all. Kicker, you are interesting to me because if I remember from our previous conversations, you never have played any of the Fallout games.
Never played any of the games. Never.
So I'm really interested from the standpoint of someone that hasn't ever played the games, how they're feeling about the show. Because I think this would be a very interesting moment because there are so many, like the Fallout world is hundreds of years and the stories have only been like very, very small time segments in the US. And we have so many other stories to tell in this world that I want to see them embrace other media and tell more stories. So
my wife and I decided to watch the first episode two nights ago and we watched the second episode last night and both episodes, my wife's like, oh, we like this. Now we got a little confused what was going on with, let's just call it the ghoul. I mean, like,
that's what he's called.
We're not sure what's going on there. Like, who's this guy? Why is he missing? Like, we didn't really understand him, but we were engaged. We're like, we like this. We want to watch more. And so we are finished two episodes. And when we watched two episodes of Three Body Problem, we're like, oh, I'm not so sure about this with Fallout. We're like, okay, we're watching this again and again until we're done. Like, we're pumped. We're pumped.
Yep.
I like that the show, it's done in such a way that is not, it's kind of like kind of over the top. And, yeah. And cool. Like it's
campy to an extent.
Yeah. It's like, it's a form of art, right? It's a form of film. And so we're really enjoying it. We're laughing, which is funny. Like there's some really depressing stuff in there and we're just laughing, enjoying it.
The Fallout games, when you get into them, you're like, this is dark. Yeah. This is really dark.
Yeah, it's dark, but it's funny. It's got good. I think the characters are interesting. There's a dog, right?
Like, yeah.
So
dog meat.
Oh, so I don't think you have to have any sort of history with the Fallout game to enjoy this TV show. You just have to be able to laugh at some dark humor and accept that maybe you won't understand everything initially, but you'll understand things.
It doesn't try to explain too much to you and like kind of like exposition dumps.
Yeah.
It tries to slowly let you understand things as the world develops. So I could see that we're like not understanding what a ghoul is. And the simple version is a ghoul is a heavily irradiated person that basically turns into somewhat of a zombie. Okay. And then over time their brain degrades and they become kind of, you know, brainless mind eating thing. But they're effectively like, as long as you don't, you know, shoot them in the head or something, they're effectively immortal.
Oh, okay.
So they can live forever, but just eventually they just lose, you know, their consciousness and become, you know,
Well, I'm interested to see what people in our Discord think. And of course, in the comments section below,
there's definitely been some chat going on in the Discord about it. So I'm trying not to spoil it.
Let's keep us moving along though. Nick, what else do we got going on here in the world of pop culture?
Yeah, one final item that I'll note here for everybody as it relates to the nerd news. We are getting a G.I. Joe Transformers crossover movie. Do you guys know about this? Have you heard about this?
No. What is going on?
Yeah, no. Okay. So this was
give me a Fallout movie.
Yes, yeah, so this was hinted at the end of the Transformers Rise of the Beast movie that came out last summer. There's an item at the end where very clearly some of the characters, it's a reference to the G.I. Joe. What we know so far is that it's going to happen. I think summer 2026 it's coming out. And so far what we know is Steven Spielberg is already on board as an executive producer. Now, are you guys, where did you guys fall in the spectrum as kids? Were you Transformers? Were you G.I. Joe? Were you both? Were you neither? What are your thoughts?
I mean, I started off with G.I. Joes and then I guess evolved to Transformers. And so, you know, that was my evolution as a child. It was actually Ninja Turtles, G.I. Joes.
Yeah, no, I was Ninja Turtles all the way. There was nothing else. It was Ninja Turtles. There was a little bit of Ghostbuster there for a while, but it was mostly Ninja Turtles.
Okay. What about you, Nick?
I was a little bit, I think that was pretty similar where it started off Ninja Turtles and G.I. Joe. Those were kind of the entry points, but then Transformers became the primary as I got older and is still one of my true loves. So I'm going to go see it. Just plain and simple. I'm going to go see it in theaters. I can't wait to see what kind of crazy popcorn bucket they come up for this movie. I mean, that's the part. Probably going to be a G.I. Joe that transforms is probably what the popcorn bucket is, right?
Oh my God.
You know, I can get behind that.
All right. Coming to our main segment tonight, Seth. Give us a brief summary real fast before we go into the meat and potatoes of the main.
Yeah. So tonight we really wanted to talk about the new Frontline Gaming Static Terrain. Now, as many folks know, if we've been to our events over the last few years, up for all of 10th edition so far, and then all of 9th edition, FLG used a system of player placed terrain. The community has been evolving since 10th edition to really start to embrace the static terrain setups that have been used by Games Workshop and other groups like WTC. And I think the UKTC also went to a fixed terrain layout not too long ago. And so the community sentiment has been building that they wanted a fixed terrain layout front-like gaming. So a few weeks ago, we announced that we would be going to a fixed layout system. This week, as part of the BAO player packet, the Frontline Gaming Static Terrain system was posted with all of the layouts for all of the terrain sets. So this is a very big packet. Just prefacing going in, there's actually 14 layouts in the packet.
Yeah, because we have three different terrain sets, and then each one has multiple layouts.
Yep. So there is one that is the Krask Outpost, and that uses the four GW layouts. So if you know GW layouts, those are basically the same layouts in there. In fact, I think we use the GW images to define those layouts. So that leaves the Urban Corruption, often called the Chaos set, and the Imperial Sanctuary, often called the Sisters set. And so what the FLG team has done is each one of those sets, there are five deployment types in the mission packet right now. So each terrain set has five different setups, one for each deployment. So that in total gives 10 different setups for the two terrain sets that are not using the GW standards, and, but and a total of 14 four events.
Let's be precise. In our player packet with the terrain there, it shows the measurements of where the terrain goes so that at our events, not just BAO, but at ACO and at LVO eventually, and I assume this is how it's going to be at most other events because a lot of people kind of follow suit, it will be on the onus of the players to go to the table and not do a player placed terrain segment of their tournament, but instead set the terrain per the diagram.
Measure and make sure to set the terrain up according to the diagram. And importantly, there is measurements. I keep in our group chats, I keep referring it to the line diagram, but there's basically an overhead schematic with measurements, and that is what you follow to set that up.
Yeah. The photos are there for you to be able to reference the terrain piece, but at the end of the day, the key thing to use your measurements for is that line diagram there.
Yep. Now
it's an STC, if you will.
It is an STC. Very good. Now there are a few rules addendums that kind of came with this document that are worth going over. All pieces of terrain are considered line of sight blocking, like an obscuring ruin, and that includes the containers and the craters or the debris fields in the sets. So keep that in mind that you without being in those terrain features, you cannot draw line of sight through those terrain features. The good thing with the Crass Outpost, the Sisters, and the Chaos set, a lot of the first floors are blocked off already. There are some lines on the charts that are worth explaining. Red ones, red lines, particularly, I think it's specifically for their Chaos set. There's basically like a little like spiked arch in a wall. Red lines on a piece of terrain mean that you can never draw a line of sight across it, aka the first floor counts as blocking line of sight. It's considered to be a solid wall.
Yeah.
There are also some green pieces of lines on ruins. Those indicate sections of ruins that are less than 2 inches tall. And remember, by the core rule book, if a piece of terrain is less than 2 inches tall, any model can move over the green segments without a movement penalty. So that helps vehicles get around easier, helps mounted units get around easier, basically, you know, non-infantry things get around easier in the game. So the last point to remember is every piece of terrain is considered to have a 4-inch gap between it. So basically, if any part of your base or model is 4 inches in diameter or less, it should be able to move between terrain features. So that allows large models like Imperial Knights or my Gorkonaut and Morkonaut to move between terrain features and not be essentially move blocked by the terrain. So that allows those models to still have access to all the various parts on the table. Okay, so with all those kind of baseline rules in place, let's look at the terrain layouts themselves. I've gone through and messed with all of these terrain layouts with my armies to kind of get a feel for them. So I kind of wanted to take you through some kind of important points with them. So this is the Crucible of Vlada layout for the Sister set, also called the Imperial Sanctuary set. And you'll notice with most of the terrain layouts, you end up having two large ruins either in your deployment zone or in a position where it allows you to deploy a good component of your army to hide behind those pieces. So most terrain layouts have a couple good pieces of line of sight blocking terrain either in your deployment zone or kind of just at the edge of your deployment zone so that you have a nice spot to deploy your army and hide so that you don't necessarily get shot if you don't want to get shot, like you're a combat army like moi. And then importantly, remember when the midfields may look a little bit more open on paper, but remember those craters and those crates do block line of sight. So there are definitely ways to get line of sight to all of the midfield objectives, but you do have to move out and engage in the midfield a lot of times to be able to get to those angles and see those things. So it really kind of ends up setting up this dynamic where each player has kind of a safe objective in their home deployment zone with some good cover. But then if you really want to fight and compete for those midfield objectives, you are going to be putting units in a position where they're going to end up exposed if the opponent moves and takes advantage of that. So there still are some midfield ruins for combat armies to kind of stage from and hide and then kind of strike into that opponent's deployment zone. But it's not so heavy that those combat armies can kind of be in the midboard and not be able to have some way to draw an angle on them. They're not completely immune. Overall, I kind of like these terrain setups because they're a happy medium between, in my mind, what is the heavier density boards, things like WTC, and the lighter density boards like the UKTC. But we can take a look at a few more of them. So if we want to click ahead to the next one. So this is another example. This is Urban Corruption. Again, same layout for deployment style and terrain. This is Crucible Battle, but you'll see because Urban Corruption has a few more ruins to play with that have a bigger footprint, we have some bigger ruins towards the midfield. So that makes it a little bit more dense on the midfield. So this board might be a little bit more advantaged to a combat army than a shooting army, but it still does have angles of fire to get to those midfield objectives and to get to some of those secure ruins if a shooting army wants to be aggressive and engage with a combat army. So lots of kind of interplay there, which I like. Basically, both of these terrain sets end up having a very solid base for you to set up and work from your deployment zone. But that midfield, which is where you're scoring a lot of your secondaries, and of course, obviously, where you're scoring a lot of primary, that ends up being a more hotly contested area. So I like that back and forth. We can flip through a few of these real quick if we want to see like the Dawn of War. Dawn of War can be a bit of a polarizing deployment type because it can be pretty easy to get angles in it, but by kind of using these crates here in the Imperial Sanctuary, they're not crates. Yeah. These are the crates that are kind of touching corners. Those do kind of add some significant kind of blockages to the midfield line of sight in each other's deployment zone. And then importantly on this one, those big central ruins kind of sitting not central circular ruins sitting on those side objectives kind of make great staging points for combat armies, and each player gets kind of one that's open to their side and close the opponent's side. So it makes you a nice little cove to hide in. So I like that. Now if we flip over to the Chaos set, we can see that one also very similar, using those larger square ruins for the midfield and a little bit more terrain in the deployment zones. But again, you're seeing some similarities here. We won't go through the rest of them, but if you guys want to take some time to play with these and get some reps yourself, again, check the link in the description to this video or the description in the podcast, or of course, join us over on our Discord. Huge shout out to Cosmic for putting the time and effort in to make these available for us. I wouldn't have the technical abilities and be able to brought these to you myself, so I'm really glad that he was able to do that for us. Huge shout out, I can't thank him enough. And I really want to get the community's feeling on this, get a chance to play with these and get a feel for them and see what do they think, how do they feel. If you have some of the physical terrain, throw it on the table. But of course, if you don't have the physical terrain, you're welcome to use TTS. If you're looking for TTS games, join our Discord. We always have some games going on in there. I'm happy to help get things set up. It looks like we've lost Kicker. I think he may have turned his internet off slightly early for this move. So I think it's just going to be Nikki and D and I for the rest of the night. Nikki D, let's get into our Discord questions for the evening.
Let's do it. Yep. So Seth, first question for us. This is from Percy. I am all game for talking out games when there isn't a lot of time left, but how do you deal with a player who decides he or she knows that he can finish out your army if they had enough time? What's your suggestion? How do you handle this situation?
So it will depend on the event you're playing at, Percy. But generally speaking, the rules are based on the amount of time remaining in the round. If both players don't have enough time to complete a turn, you can't proceed to the next battle round. So for instance, Nikki D and I are playing. I'm top of turn. Nikki D is bottom of turn. And we only had 2 or 3 minutes left in the round. I could not play the top of a turn in a round and then Nikki D not be able to play the bottom of his turn and score. So some events do allow you, I think the GW events do have judges help you talk it out to reach a natural conclusion. FLG events, it's based on your clock, your remaining clock. If you both don't have enough time to complete, then generally speaking, the judges rule that you stop that at that battle round. And it's certainly a reasonable argument that if you had two more hours to play the game, you could have, tabled someone, but at the end of the day, we are all using the same amount of time. And if they did not use their time efficiently and get through all 5 battle rounds, I would not award the player the points for rounds that they were not able to complete because of their lack of time. So In those scenarios, do not be afraid to call a judge. I think that's something as a community that we can all work on, myself included, is not being afraid to call a judge to adjudicate those situations. It doesn't have to be a accusatory thing, calling a judge. It can be chill. Judges are just a nice impartial way to settle those disputes. So if you're ever in that scenario and you're uncomfortable, Percy, always call a judge. What's next?
Great answer, Seth. Next question. Oh, Seth, you're going to love this one. It is from our buddy, Mike Forge. I say buddy because he's in the Discord, which we love our friends in the Discord. Beast Boss on Squigasaur and Mazrog still being run in the same list. So I assume that they're talking about the new Codex orcs.
Ooh, yeah.
Is that too much of an investment with two units of Squigs and their individual quote unquote nerfs versus running them solo? Obviously we don't know what points are yet for the new orc codex, but what are your initial thoughts? You said you've played some games. Have you used
I have used Beast Boss on Squigasaurs and Squiggles. I haven't used Mazrog. So the big change that we had that's kind of worth noting is these units, we talked about it in our Codex Cliff Notes, are able to join the Squighogs are now joined by the Beast Boss on Squigasaur and by Mazrog. They're no longer characters that just run around by themselves. And because of that, they had to change how some of the data sheet works. And specifically, Mazrog used to be able to get extra crit hits on fives to wound, and he had extra damage. He has since been changed so that he no longer gets crit hits on fives to wound, and his unit has a fight on death on a 4+. That's all right, but I don't like planning on fight on death because you're planning on dying.
Exactly.
And then it just means it's more or less a one use thing at that point. So I don't particularly love that. Mazrog still has some of the only damage three in the Orc Codex on his close combat weapon. So that's still very good. He is still more durable by having a 4+ invuln save, but the buffs, the Beast Boss on Squigasaur got, I think are better. It used to have an aura of reroll charges. It now adds one to the charge roll made by its unit, which is very nice to have that +1 to charge because you still have access to reroll through a CP reroll. If you have the CP available. The other thing the Beast Boss got is it used to heroic intervene itself for one less CP, meaning that 2 CP strat became a 1 CP strat. Now its unit gets to heroic intervene for 0 CP. And that unit has a very large footprint. Mm-hmm. So you can make it very hard to charge the orc army without ending within 6 inches of that unit. And because it's 0 CP, it's really nothing to lose by doing that strat. So I think Beast Boss on Squigasaurs are kind of outweighing Mazrog right now. But if you really need that damage three, Mazrog is still kind of your boy for that.
Here we go. All right. Last Discord question we're going to do for tonight, Seth, comes from Bobby, the RPG Luminary. Mm-hmm. Do you think there is any hope for competitive Custodes for the rest of the edition outside of reliance on Forge World models?
I've been talking about that with some folks because, yeah, certainly the vibe is the Custodes Codex is weaker than it was in the index phase. You could certainly pull the points lever and make Custodes really cheap. Now, I mean, if a Custodian was like 20 points a body, like that army would be pants on head broken. But that kind of breaks the theme of the army. If Custodes become a horde infantry army, you're like, these are supposed to be like the golden elite of the Imperium. And why does this guy have 50 of them over there? So I think you could balance it, but it would kind of break the army thematically. So there certainly could be some FAQs and erratas on the line to maybe tweak the rules and make them a little bit stronger. I get not wanting to rely on Forge World. As far as I'm aware, anything that's made it, you know, this far in the edition, I have no reason to believe it won't make it further in the edition. This is the guy that just has 24 grot tanks on his paint table. I'm pretty committed to Forge World being a thing, folks. So I wouldn't be worried about relying on Forge World right now, particularly if you already have it. I can understand the hesitance of going out and buying things if you're worried about them getting sunsetted, but if they've made it into the codex this far, I feel confident, but everyone has their own levels of risk tolerance. Nikki D, you have been farming some hobby progress from our Discord, seeing what our lovely members of the community have been up to. Do you want to take us through what our community hobby progress has been for this week?
Yeah, absolutely. So again, this is actually one of my favorite things that we have in the Discord and that we've taken from, you know, the Facebook group as well. And this is especially, this is one of the parts where painting, it keeps us all motivated, right? So Seth with the right hand showing off the model here. So
yeah, I'm like, wait, no, not wrong side, that way. It's over there now.
Yep. So first up here, it's Sassy Nurgling. That's the name of the person in Discord. And perhaps not surprisingly, they've got a Nurgle unit. This is a Death Guard first crawler. Fits. Yep. So they do have, I do know that they have magnetized the sponson, so they can either do the spitters or the entropy cannons. Those are not shown.
I've seen them used back and forth across the edition, so I could definitely see the need to magnetize. Yep,
exactly. Seth, the thing I'll point out here, Death Guard models, especially when you've got extensive edge highlighting like you do here, I really think it takes a lot of work, but I really think it makes the models also look a lot better. You've talked about it before. Death Guard can look a little bit drab, and to me, this model just, it stands out more than
it does. And then the patina on that copper always also that blue green patina also kind of adds some more depth to the, gives them a little more pop to the model. So I always love that. So good job, Sassy.
Yep. So that's we got Death Guard first, an army that I love. But Seth, What is this bad boy?
This is Zitalok's Megatrack Scrap Jet, and he did a lot of great work with the base to have it kind of driving on a busted up road and ramping off it. I love the rust work on this model because, I mean, the lore on the Megatrack Scrap Jet is, I'm a orc, I crashed my plane, I slapped some wheels on it, let's go. So it is supposed to be beat up looking, and he made that thing weathered and beat up. It came out great, so great job, Zitalok, looking just right.
And then next we have from Frankie Fresh. This is Space Marine's Thunderstrike Speeder. Frankie Fresh is one of my good friends and my roommate each year at Cherokee Open. Frankie, congrats on winning your GT this past weekend with Blood Angels. Yep. If you saw from Joe Meta Monday, right, talking about a Blood Angels list, that was this Frank. He's also quite a skilled painter. I know he's been working on a display board so that he can up his hobby game. But right now he is still working on that Iron Storm list / also using Blood Angels, Sons of Slaying, Sanguinius.
Sons of Slamguinius.
I know, I always get it mixed up there. But yeah, so Frank, great work on the hobby table, great work on the competitive table. And then last but not least, we have from Wolf Daddy, a model that is definitely not a wolf. Ooh. It's an Autark. It's an Eldar Autark.
I might be prejudiced against Eldar, but you gotta appreciate a good, clean, painted Eldar model. And the shading on all of those individual feathers on the crest and the wings, this came out really well. So that's looking really good, Wolf Daddy.
Yeah, I was initially not interested in showing off Eldar, but then sometimes the model is just too good. You can't say no to
sometimes good art. You override our Eldar prejudice by painting well.
Fair enough. Yeah. Yeah. So Seth, that takes us through our hobby progress. We'll get to our end of our show here for this week. Kicker did note that he does have an RTT, his last tournament in Louisiana, that he's really excited for.
Good send off with his boys there.
Yep. So he's excited for that. Seth, for myself, what am I doing this weekend? Getting in some more hobby time. Probably
watching Fallout.
Oh yeah, I will start Fallout. So hobby progress, probably finishing my my Plague Marines. I have to finish up the basis for some of my other Nurgle models that I had shown weeks or months before, and then starting Fallout. That's it for me. But good. Seth, how about for you?
I think I'm supposed to record with Vanguard Tactics on Friday for their Codex review of Orcs. I owe Cosmic a game or two on TTS. I also owe my coach some games on TTS, so I'll probably play some TTS. And then I owe my wife a dinner this weekend, so we're going to go out and have a nice dinner. We're looking at trying to see if we can get the timing to work out for our reservations for dinner to work out, and then go see Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare afterward. Yeah. But the showings aren't quite lining up, so we might do like dinner Saturday and maybe the movie before dinner, or maybe move the movie to Sunday. We'll see. And then somewhere in between all that, I probably have to start painting Grot tanks.
Seth, good call out on Gentlemanly Warfare, because that is likely also going to be on my calendar.
Very good. Very good. So yeah. Good, yeah. I'm looking forward to it. I want to try to make it happen, but you know, we just kind of try to slot it into our reservations, because we had reservations at a nice restaurant in town and can't really move those at this point. So we kind of have to figure out how to work around that. But Anyway, that's it for tonight. We do apologize that we lost Kicker. We can't help, you know, sometimes that the ravenous hordes of South Louisiana sometimes attack the internet, but we persevere. We thank you so much for joining us. We really hope you enjoyed this episode of Signals from the Frontline. Have a great week, and we will see you on the front line.